The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, we're live. We are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. There's something that's going to happen every week. I left my mic up while we were doing the sort of pre-show, this intro, the countdown. People were listening to me type, so that was pretty good. I'm really glad I wasn't doing anything else. And then the winds have been kicking up like crazy in our neck of the woods, and I definitely suffer from seasonal allergies. So I'm on antihistamines and allergy medications and decongestion. So unfortunately, and I do commiserate with those of you who are sensitive to these types of sounds, there will be some biology on this podcast, as I will often need to clear my throat. My tech review is saying a butterfly keyboard. No, I need the clackiest switches, which is always great for recording audio. Welcome! I'm so excited to be in this chat room and doing this show with y'all. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling like this is going to be a good, fun, cranky episode of the SGGQA podcast channel. The SGG, of course, Some Gadget Guy. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, your fateful host for this endeavor. And the QA obviously stands for question and answer. This is a terribly named podcast series, but I want this to be an interactive conversation about the week's top tech topics, some news that we've got to cover, some new product announcements. We've got a lot. This was a pretty busy week getting out of CES and into 2021. We're hitting the ground running. We already have, a major phone release to talk about. We've got some tech and politics that we'll need to dig into, antitrust and corruption scandals. And I just, in being the nerd for new social media services, I can share my first experiences using Clubhouse, this new audio streaming app. So, Dave Burns, oh, you're excited because you were right about the S21? If you're a pessimist, you're never disappointed. Aww. Oh, and TK Bay. TK Bay says he loves my hat. And I wonder why he would enjoy my current topical headgear. So, folks, I hope you all had a lovely weekend, and I hope you've been kind of getting into what's going on, because, like I said, CES was a really interesting social experiment on how we can continue tech conversations and how companies and manufacturers can still try to generate buzz and excitement over new products, over new services. I tried to kind of go a little radio silent just for focusing on specific projects. But it definitely was a very interesting work balance. I'm still here in the Gadget Lab. I did all of my CES coverage for reviews.org and Newegg and my own, you know, podcast and videos. It was all right here. So while I'm still trying to review other gadgets and put together videos, I was trying to keep like CES stuff happening on my computer monitors. And it was definitely more of a split focused show for this go round. It was hard. It was hard to juggle that because, you know, if I'm in here, I feel like I should be doing a certain kind of work, but CES kind of demands a different type of focus. And it just reinforced the differences in how different people cover CES, where I am not a keynotes kind of guy. I love CES for hitting the show floor or going to a Pepcom or a Showstoppers, these little sort of mini sideshows that go along with CES. And I want the buzz of all of these people around me and getting to handle product. The idea of sitting and watching like a 30 minute to hour long presentation just doesn't do it for me. You know, this was our new initiative with our Paralympics team. That's amazing. I'm really glad your company is investing in such a worthwhile endeavor. My beat kind of depends on talking about the product that you're going to be showing off or the service that you're trying to enable for consumers or, you know, like just what's the new gadget? We're at CES. Tell me about a new TV, something. Oh, I have to sit here for an hour. So there was a lot. So even with CES going on, I was still trying to produce some additional content and to really kind of work some of the longer term conversations that I feel are sort of vital to the future of tech competition. So I got to forewarn, I got to put it out there. I'm really feeling strong that this is going to be a proper crank kind of podcast. I don't know if any of you out there currently watching this, and apologies for people that are listening to the audio feed after the fact. If you're inclined, if you're one of those folks who occasionally shares, this would be the good one to share because I'm feeling like we're gonna have some meaty stuff to tear into. And I also think some of it might be a bit divisive. Like, you know, we might get some good debate happening in the comments on this one because we're going to be digging in and because I'm kind of a snarky git. I would remind folks that if you have differing opinions on some of these topics, please keep it, you know, chill. We're all friends here and we can disagree. Don't be like commenters on YouTube who tend to come from subreddits that really don't like me. So, let's jump in. And I do have to apologize. Like even like last week, I'm seeing all of the fluctuations of my broadband connection. So hopefully the stream holds out and I don't completely vanish. And my camera is just a little high. I'm going to angle it down. There we go. That's a little bit better. All right. Let's jump into some housekeeping. Let's knock that out. Cause like I said, there was a bunch, just a bunch of stuff, bunches and bunches and bunches of stuff. Blue Malicious. I never knew you were sarcastic. Me? No, I'm perfectly earnest as the day is long. All right. let me get this out of the way here. I did not set my browser. Let's see if the browser is the right shape. Yeah, nailed it. All right. So from last week, we were obviously talking about the kickoff of CES. I really wanted to start off the new year by looking back. The first video I put out last week, using an old mid-range phone in 2021, does it still work? Now, if you've been watching the podcast or if you've been following some of the stuff that I put together with TK Bay. Oh, did I already put it away? Yeah, I think I already put the phone away. Aw, man. I thought I had it out. Oh, it's over here. So using an old mid-range phone. I've been putting together reviews on phones like the LG Velvet, you know, devices that are purpose-built in the mid-range. And one of the things that kind of comes up regularly is, oh, well, we're real concerned about the processing power. If you buy a mid-ranger phone, as apps and operating system updates get more aggressive, then you're not going to have enough processing power to hang. You're not going to be able to keep up. And so I wanted to test that. You know, we keep making this claim, but not a lot of techies really go back to verify that claim. You know, a claim is meaningless. It's just an IMO, my opinion. Well, but that doesn't hold water. If you're not going to back it up with some evidence or some data, then what are we doing here? So I trotted out my Huawei Nova. This is a over 4-year-old. It's almost a 5-year-old phone. It has a Snapdragon 625, shoots 4K video, has a decent little display on. I believe it's a 720p display. Yeah, it's still running Android 6. So catch that video and you can see how that phone actually lives up to a modern workload where I'm editing and rendering 4K video, where I'm mixing down an hour-long podcast, where I'm chewing up 200 RAW files from a Sony a7 III. Mind you, 200 RAW files from a Sony a7 III is over 9 gigabytes of photos in one batch process to generate 3 gigabytes of high quality JPEGs. If you're not doing laptop grade computing from your phone, how worried should we be about a phone using a mid-ranger processor? I wonder. All right, enough of that mugging. Moving right along. TK and I are kind of finding a good flow. We're trying to keep up a regular weekly stream, the best of our week. We got together again for episode 5, where we were talking about the Galaxy S21 as an Apple-flavored compromise, which I feel was being very diplomatic and fair to a phone that I don't think I'm going to like. But we also talked about wrapping up CES and, again, kind of sharing more of my thoughts that I kicked off this podcast with. If you kind of want to dig in a little bit more on kind of that tech coverage, that tech reviewer, live streamer, broadcaster, journalist, what have you. I mean, you want to call us influencers. We in the second half of the podcast, we spent a lot of time talking about Samsung. In the second half of that podcast, we kind of shared a little bit more just how this was different and what worked and what didn't work. And again, it's TK. And I very much value those conversations just personally because, like, he's my buddy and I like being able to hang out with my friends. And then lastly, in keeping with the theme of snark and crank, I put out a video called Samsung is Killing the SD Card. Can we save it? I am very upset by a continuing trend of removing features from premium phones, that the more expensive a phone gets, the more incomplete the experience is, and how you're often kind of wedged into buying other accessories or just spending more on the phone to complete the experience. Now, in that video, I used a phrase that I am happy, I am proud to stand behind. Where in that video, I said, I mean, roughly, I'm kind of paraphrasing myself here, that if you aren't concerned by this trend on some level, then you are bad at tech. Now, this upset 3 whole people in the comments on YouTube. One person I had to just ban hammer because he was not only insulting and aggressive and mean-spirited to the reply to start with, he also started going after other people in the comments. Now, this video has a lot of comments. This is probably one of the most immediately commented on videos that I've produced in a long while. And 3 people got really upset by my phrase, bad at tech. Everyone else who left a comment, pretty much on board the commentary that I'm trying to build, that I'm trying to share. Of those 3 people, one person just wanted to call me bad names. So that's just kind of par for the course. I'm pretty sure they came from our Android. They always need me to be wrong, and so they'll pick on something in my tone, even though they're not really commenting on the things that I'm talking about. It's, oh, no, I don't like you. The other two people I feel were very emblematic of a breed of Samsung Knight. People who are label snobs, and they just want to be at the cool kids table, and they're willing to throw away anything else so long as Samsung verifies that that's the right thing to do. So one person, this was what was really funny. I started that video off specifically talking about tech privilege, how privileged you must be to own things like nice cameras and great computers, and so that you can turn your premium phone purchase into just a basic communicator. You're not expecting anything out of a $1,300, $1,200 phone than just covering the basics. You know, point and shoot camera, snapshotty, social media, great. As we've shown, really old mid-rangers still handle that job just fine today. So you don't need to go and spend $1,200 if you're looking at an average consumer kind of experience. We're all on board there. So the first gentleman was hilarious because in disproving me, he made this great argument. I don't need IR blasters because I went out and bought a top-of-the-line Harmony Universal Remote. And I don't need a 3.5-millimeter headphone jack because I've been buying expensive Bluetooth headsets. And I don't need an SD card because when I had an SD card, I bought a 1-terabyte card and I never filled the card. And can you see where I'm going with this? This sort of Samsung elitism where Samsung does something and I really want to keep justifying the label. So I keep giving Samsung more money and I keep buying other expensive accessories that I used to not need to buy because Samsung is removing those features from the phone. That doesn't do a very good job of disproving my argument that we should keep things like SD card expansion. That actually supports my argument pretty well. There's someone out there who would prefer to spend a little more on a nicer phone and have all of this additional feature, all of these additional features, all of this additional functionality, and not have to buy a bunch of other accessories to make that expensive phone work. It's a very good reason why the mid-ranger phones are outselling the premium tier devices. Samsung sells way more Galaxy A than they do Galaxy S. Galaxy A phones keep things like headphone jacks and memory card expansion. So I feel like that's that person is bad at tech. When I use that phrase, bad at tech, that's a pretty good example of someone who is, in fact, bad at tech. The second gentleman just wanted to try and strawman my argument. Oh, well, if you're complaining about SD cards, you must have been one of those people who cried when Apple got rid of the 3.5-inch floppy disk. Which also is a terrible analogy. When we got rid of floppy disks, we had evolved into better methods of storage. And mind you, we didn't build computers that were fused shut and couldn't add storage, you know, through some kind of physical media. We moved on to CDs. We had moved on. People were trying to make zip drives a thing. Zip drives turned out to not be a thing. But by the time we had gotten rid of the floppy disk, and especially the not-so-floppy floppy disk, we had found better methods of adding temporary large quantities of storage. So, yeah, that's a bad analogy. And in sharing a bad analogy, that is an individual who is bad at tech. And again, it's this type of I got mine, screw the rest of you mentality that seems to generate more from the Samsung Knights. You know, people who want to flex really expensive phones in the Android land. So they still feel like they're counterculture, right? They still feel like, oh, I'm not one of those Apple sheeple. I'm flashing a Galaxy and I spent a lot of money on it. But that also kind of is informed by a toxic conversation which has been generated from Samsung. From the top down, Samsung's advertising focuses still on mocking rivals and then copying whatever's profitable for them. Recent commercial campaigns from Samsung made fun of Apple employees and Apple customers. And we can say, you know, we can debate the merits of advertising, but in seeing the commentary that comes from a tiny vocal minority of gadget and tech enthusiasts that leave, I'm not counting the people that just thumbs down my videos. The people that actually engage. If you're going to jump into the comments, you're actually going to put some effort into sharing your Samsung knighthood, then that's what I'm focusing on here. The three people who in a video with hundreds of comments needed me to be wrong somehow, picking terrible debate points and terrible arguments to side against my assertion that people who are fine with this are, in fact, bad at tech. So I stand by it. It is purposely argumentative and inflammatory, and it's targeted at exactly the caliber of tech enthusiast who has turned the smartphone into the entertainment. It's not about what the smartphone can do for you. It's about the smartphone itself is what we find entertaining. And those are people I really genuinely don't want in my comments. Those are people I genuinely don't care if they ever come back to revisit my videos. Those are people who don't join these conversations in earnest. They're bad actors. They're label snobs. I don't care about the label on my bag as much as I care about what that bag can do for me. I don't care about the icon on the back of my phone as much as I care about what that phone can do for me. And Samsung, since, you know, what, the... I would say since the Note 4, but maybe more recently the Note 9, has been steadily walking away from what I care about. They got rid of the active, they got rid of the headphone jack, they got rid of removable batteries, they got rid of IR blasters, they got rid of SD cards. None of these are moves that really enhance the user experience. They're moves to generate more profit and to encourage more accessory purchases, which leads to more profit. So that's fine. I mean, that's what a mega corporation like Samsung should do. But that's also why we need competition, so that we have other options in the marketplace that can fulfill those additional uses and features and things that we care about, and that we should be voting with our wallet, not voting to sit at the cool kids' lunch table. My tech review. I was talking yesterday with Sam and Andrew, and how it's not about removing the SD card is that they don't even bring the OTG adapter anymore. So not only do you not get MagStripe payments for Samsung Pay, they don't even put the little, where is it? No, this is my one from LG. You know, from my last LG, they still put the little USB adapter in the box. So there you go. Was that LG? That might have been from my Pixel. I don't remember. Dave Burns, why have more in one device when I can get more devices to do more specific tasks? Blue Malicious, so Samsung don't speak broke also. Q3 Becker, why would you spend $70 on a micro SD card that you can swap in and out and keep with you when changing phones, when you can simply buy the 512 gigabyte model for at least $150 more? Why would you want to do that? And so, you know, there's a fair conversation to be had in there. An SD card is not going to be as fast, is not going to be as incorporated into the phone. And I would wholeheartedly tell people this type of storage is not designed to be used like the main built-in storage. So those people who are really, really upset, you know, like, oh, sure, I had an SD card fail and, you know, you can't even install apps on the SD card. Well, I would respectfully tell that person that's not the point. The point is some people generate a ton of media. Some people just want to store a ton of media. And if that's a usage for you, then that's where the SD card becomes a lifesaver. You don't have, the cloud streaming services, cloud services depend on you always having the bestest internet connection. And we know that that's not the reality for most consumers out there, especially those who never walk through the echo chambers of insufferable nerd gatekeeper commentary. If that's only where you live, is in the comments of that kind of hive mind, then you are so far off the pulse of what really generates interest in the consumer electronics space and where people are really spending their money. But you're going to feel real good about those hot takes where all the other insufferable gatekeepers are nodding along with you, be like us. So it's troubling. It's troubling because $10 billion a year marketing campaigns work. They work really well. And this is a time where a lot of folks have brought up, well, the Galaxy S6 got rid of the SD card, but then they brought it back for the S7. I don't think it's coming back. I think now we're in a position where Samsung feels like they've got enough momentum where they can ride it out and where they can say, oh, now you just got to deal with it. That's where we're going moving forward. And people will, you know, they'll complain like they complained when Apple got rid of the headphone jack. But what am I going to do? There's just nothing else I can buy. And then we'll just keep losing features from there. And it's going to have a ripple effect throughout the rest of the smartphone industry. I'm on the losing side of this debate. That's handily apparent, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go quiet. It means I'm going to continue to push away from Samsung as a solution for my own needs because they have zero interest in delivering products that can get my work done. All right. I've got some highlights here I do want to kind of get through. Alice Bockley, but aren't most high-end device producers going in that direction anyway? I don't have a great feeling about LG this March. See, that's where I'm anxious. You know, it's if you've been following my channel, pretty clear why I kind of lean towards LG and Sony for my own personal photo and video work. I want headphone jacks and I want SD card expansion. So whatever's going to be replacing the V series, if it's called the V70 or if they come up with a new name for it, I think it might be kind of a merge of the Velvet, you know, a prettier phone but with more powerful internals. Kind of like the back of the Wing, but with a bit more horsepower. We've seen some leaks and renders and some rumors, but we haven't seen whether or not we're going to have that headphone jack and that SD card. I am at least cautiously optimistic that when we saw the Wing, it got rid of the headphone jack, which made me super sad. But with 256 gigabytes of built-in storage, it kept the SD card. So that would still be a video production platform I could kind of hang with. It just makes my audio job significantly more difficult. From Osran, Osran 319, Samsung to me has just year by year been feeling like they have resigned themselves to being the iPhone of Android and just doing that and relying on the brand name, like you said. And the thing is, you know, it's not to take away from manufacturers that have always focused on a more consumer tier experience. I mentioned in that video, like, we've always had this fun debate between like OnePlus and Google on one side, who are more about streamlining the phone experience, making wicked fast devices and leaning on cloud services, against Samsung and LG that have been more feature hardware rich devices, but haven't always, you know, done as good a job of keeping up with software updates and other, you know, again, we used to be able to make that kind of a harder debate between brands like that. So if you want an Android iPhone, I feel like the Google, the Pixels satisfy that really well and are extremely cost effective for being kind of a feature complete solution against an iPhone. You want the most streamlined and you want hardware that comes direct from the company that makes the software. I'm good. And that's what I want in Android, is I want the competition to point to someone who isn't going to ever use an SD card, wants a streamlined communicator device, wants something sleek, knows that they're going to get good software support. I would point them towards a Pixel. I can't really use a Pixel as my main daily driver in its current state because of the additional features that I would want. I'm trying to shoot a video, and like, I'm also following up on the Sony A7S III. In one day, shooting outdoor B-roll on my V60, I shot 12 gig of video in tiny little snippets just to kind of pad out some of the usage of this camera. 12 gig in one afternoon shoot. 128 gigs of built-in storage locked down with all of my other apps and media ain't gonna do it. That is not it. Otaku, how will we ever feel good about ourselves without basing a huge part of our identities on what popular mega corporations' products we can afford? And again, I am not interested in turning my phone into some kind of fashion flex. In my tech review, Samsung is trying to trap every single one of their customers into their own ecosystem, just following Apple's steps. High phone prices, removing accessories, and pushing Exynos chips into everything, and a future not far, Exynos laptops running on Dex. I'm sad because from the Note 4 days, I was mega Samsung, hardcore Samsung bro. And kind of like Apple way back in the day, I was an Apple product specialist for a DOE contract, and I was insufferable mega Apple nerd. It just seems to be the way that, you know, we always have to kind of keep moving, right? I'd like a house I can live in for a while, but apparently I'm just going to rent. Where I would love a company that actually started by focusing on me as a consumer with a higher demand of productivity on these devices, would still at least consider offering a solution that would keep me in their fold. But apparently, I am not worth it. So it's a bummer. Arthur Lee, 12 gigs. One, you think you might have a problem? I might have a problem in that I shoot high quality video because I like my eyes. And again, it's like, I've been kind of catching up with people. Go back and look at some of your family memories shot from a couple years ago. And all of those tech nerds that were on it about, oh, well, I don't think 4K video is really worth it right now. Because, like, you don't even really have, like, the storage. You know, how you keep up. You know, 4K video is so big and it's so hard to store. My daughter's first steps 4 years ago are in 4K. They look pretty good. Her entire life has been documented in 4K quality. She can go back and look at her earliest memories growing up in the best quality I could capture. I feel like people who had the capabilities or had the resources or just the potential to shoot better memories, but they decided not to because, you know, I mean, like, I'm with that guy on that tech blog because I don't know. I mean, do I really want to store this stuff? You're going to go back and look at like 720p, 1080p. It's going to look okay. It's going to look fine, but it's not going to look great. And it could have looked a lot better. My mom and my uncle went through and scanned a bunch of slides, transferred a bunch of 8 millimeter film. It looks good. It looks really good. I can see my grandfather and my grandmother when they were dating as teenagers, dancing, doing some swing dancing, and it looks amazing. Film aged so much better than 1080p video. It's not even close. And so, you know, the first best time to start capturing your memories in higher quality was like 5 years ago. The second best time to start capturing your memories in higher quality is today. And it's not the gig if they're going to keep cutting the storage on us or the ability to add more storage via a memory card.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Walt Samarista, I'm going to shoot 720p videos on my $1,200 phone. You joke, but think about it. That was actually a real concern. We're really concerned about storage and quality. What are we doing? Are we techies or are we not?
I do not get it. I don't get it at all. And especially like when Huawei started doing HEVC, so we had amazing compression that we could leverage to reduce the file size of 4K videos. And then people were like, oh, but I can't just drop it into Final Cut very easily. So HEVC isn't worth it. And Huawei made their camera terrible. What are you doing? What are you doing? And from techies who really should have known better. I'm not just strawmanning. Those were legit tweets. And often those tweets had even harsher language than what I'm paraphrasing here. Mega players, huge YouTube channels. There is a very profitable business in telling people what they want to hear, as opposed to saying, hey, you know what? This HEVC is a little harder to work with, but dang, if it isn't awesome that you can save way higher quality video and it takes up way less space. Nope, it's always, I had it. It changed my behavior 2%, and no one should ever have to change their behavior to ever do anything. It should just work. Screw that. All right. all right. There is actually just a little bit more housekeeping from that rant. I want to show this off here. In wrapping up CES, I had that conversation with TK, but a little bit more focused on some of our hits and some of our misses. I want to show this one off because I don't get to co-host with Trisha Hirschberger as often as I'd like to, and I really miss working with Mike, who used to run the Newegg Twitch stream, Newegg Plays. And so we had a phenomenal, it's just an hour long, it's a great chat back and forth, but it was really just like falling into old friendships. And it was a really lovely conversation. I was really, really glad to wrap that up on Friday. So if you want, again, it's another look and it's another example of some of the top announcements from CES. This was a lot of fun to put together as a live stream. And then as a respite from all of the tech and CES news, I had a lovely conversation with Franco over at Audio 46. They're a little headphone retailer. They sell headphones and audio kit, and it's a cute little shop, and they're trying to get a bit savvier about their social media presence, and he's got a podcast and interview series. And it was a great conversation. I needed some audio nerd in addition to my tech nerd for the week of CES. So this again, another, you need me to be a crank and you need me to complain about trends in consumer electronics. I feel like I have done a very good job of offering a potential warning to audiophiles about not being more like techies. So don't be like us techies, you audio geeks. Try and find a way to embrace more people and grow your community. So that wraps us up for housekeeping. Housekeeping only took 35 minutes this week. Blue Malicious. Wait, everything is housekeeping. Always has been, buddy. Always has been. All right, let's get into some news. We got to work news fast. ZDNet has an article that I want people to read through. I'm just putting this up there. And again, everything that I've talked about in housekeeping and all of the articles and news posts that I'm talking about this week can be found in the show notes on somegadgetguide.com. As we move forward through the rest of this, because we're going to talk about the Galaxy S21 and at the end of this podcast, I would like to just put it out there one more time. If you're feeling like sharing, this would be a good one to share. And also for folks listening to the audio stream, always greatly appreciate you sharing and reviewing on your favorite podcasting services. All right. Mac OS malware used run-only Apple scripts to avoid detection for 5 years. Now remember, Macs don't get viruses. This is coming by way of ZDNet. Catalin Simpao, I think that's how you pronounce his name. For more than 5 years, macOS users have been the targets of a sneaky malware operation that used a clever trick to avoid detection and hijacked the hardware resources of infected users to mine cryptocurrency behind their backs. So what they did is they nested these run-only Apple scripts into software like leaked or cracked versions of games and Office productivity software. So again, user behavior matters more than having the fanciest malware detection software or trusting that the operating system can somehow protect you from a threat. Macs still have this overwhelming sort of fog of marketing that they're not prone to these types of attacks like Windows machines are. Windows machines are just so insecure. This is kind of a good example of how this monolithic strategy that Apple has created can be circumvented and can kind of take root in very unexpected ways. Again, there's an apparatus of Windows malware detection that is more aggressive and is more reactionary to these types of threats. And Apple doesn't seem to be able to generate the same type of verification and security response that Microsoft can. Again, you're going to put up with more issues on a more regular basis with Windows. When there's a big problem on macOS, it's a proper big problem. So I want to get to the end here. Let me get back into the article. Run-only Apple scripts are surprisingly rare in the macOS malware world, but both the longevity of and the lack of attention to the macOS.OSA minor campaign, which has likely been running for at least 5 years, shows exactly how powerful run-only Apple scripts can be for evasion and anti-analysis. In this case, we have not seen the actor use any of the more powerful features of Apple script that we've discussed elsewhere, and they've got some links, but that is an attack vector that remains wide open and which many defensive tools are not equipped to handle. So, as techies, we're the good tech neighbors, right? We are good tech citizens. Family member, this isn't to say, you know, like you tell the family member not to buy a Mac. This is the conversation you have with them to ensure they talk to you before doing something which might be kind of risky. This is where you get them set up on browsers that have good plugins to defend against, you know, crappy ads and pop-ups and all of that mess. The number of times I had to clean out my grandfather's old computer because they would click on everything that said click here. And I would go, and they would have a browser just full of toolbars, and they would keep not using other browsers that I would try to set them up with better security tools, because they would just use internet, and then they would just go off and do the worst possible things. Every email from their conservative email lists had a link or it had a file attachment. They just had to open it. They just had to click on it. So we can't defend against this type of an attack on any platform, on Windows, on Mac, on mobile devices, if the user behavior circumvents some common sense. That's exactly what these types of attacks prey on. And Macs are not only no better, in some instances, malware on Macs can be way worse. So we got to at least join that conversation to help give people proper expectations. Apple marketing, ain't it? It's us. It's on us. It's always been on us. All Greg. I trash half of my email, if not all. Yeah, I'm definitely feeling you there. All right, moving right along. In other Apple news, and this one's brief, I'm not keen on Spotify kind of trying to corner their own exclusive podcasts and audio streams. I'm even less keen on Apple. I know it's podcast because people used to subscribe with iPods, but a subscription podcasting service, I don't know. Anytime we see something like this is written up by Chris Holt over at Engadget. I'd recommend just checking it out, and it's a pretty short read, but lots of links and talking about sort of the market right now with, you know, like Spotify is heavily investing. They snapped up Joe Rogan. They've got limited and exclusive podcast series. And I get it. We're trying to find ways to monetize this, But the old system was fine. You know, you got marketing or you got ads or you've got, you know, sponsorships or a media outlet just makes their own content, or you can subsidize it through some kind of crowdfunding initiative. I really genuinely don't know what Apple can bring to this that's going to be any particular benefit outside of just popularizing and promoting their own content above the community of podcasters that make stuff. So now it's going to be the same kind of Facebook style chilling effect, right? You know, if you were an Apple podcast, you'd be getting a lot more promotion in our podcasting app and on our podcasting services. I mean, sure would be a shame if, you know, all those subscribers that you had, you know, if it was more difficult for people to engage with your podcast. I'm just saying, you know, maybe it's better to be an exclusive on our platform. That's what you should do. That's, again, podcasting is such a democratized, is such a freely, openly accessible solution for making and sharing content. Anything that stands in the way of that should be examined with the utmost scrutiny. And just, you know, again, with tactical efficiency, we should be considering the ramifications of what that might mean and what kind of chilling effect it might have. It's not good. Sorry, I got to backtrack. From Squishy Man 2007, when I got my laptop, my dad told me not to get Windows because it has viruses and Macs don't. And I told him that wasn't true and that Macs also get viruses, and I would get viruses on a Windows laptop, and I wouldn't get viruses on a Windows laptop if I knew what I was doing. I mean, we mock marketing, but man, it's insidious. That little bug gets in there and it's bait. I mean, it's generational. It's done. Someone saw a Mac versus PC commercial from the late 90s with Justin Long, and now they're done. They got off the tech train. That's the last idea that they had for tech, and it's just sticking with it. Excuse me. And from Blue Malicious, like you said a while back, to everyone, even big YouTubers seem to be getting a podcast these days to have more control over their revenue stream and be less dependent on YouTube, like Supersaf and our boy from Bored at Work. I mean, it's a pretty clear trend. Also, I mean, Bored at Work, if he's doing a podcast, and just, you know, not like I didn't do his podcast for years, just saying. Okay, anyway, moving right along. This was another big story, but it's one of those that I kind of feel is just going to be untangled over a longer period of time. So I've got two kind of back to back here. We should not let Facebook and WhatsApp off the hook. WhatsApp delays controversial update after user backlash. Now, I'm pulling this from MSN News, but it was originally posted at Mashable from Stan Schroeder. WhatsApp has caused quite a bit of commotion with a planned update to its privacy policy, which spooked users as it added more detail on how Facebook and third-party businesses can use and interact with user data on the platform. They're not changing any of their policy. We know they're not going to really make a product that's better for their users. Everything about Facebook's business model is exploiting their users to enhance their profits with other businesses. Users are just the fuel that kind of gets ground up and burned into the profitability of other business sectors. So don't let them off the hook. Even though post this announcement, because they're going to push pause, they're going to wait for all of this to simmer down, and then they're just going to do what they were going to do anyway. There's nothing stopping Facebook at present from really making the service as kind of gross as they can. Because at the same time, mass exodus from WhatsApp causes Signal servers to buckle under the pressure. And this is written up by Android Authority from C. Scott Brown. In light of the WhatsApp announcement, a bunch of people tried to sign up for Signal, and that hurt their servers. They were down for about a day, of a full day. And that also seemed to impact, if you were using the Signal app for like SMS, if you were trying to like send text messages, also messed up what you could do because everything just kind of got proper shut down. It's funny. In my family, we're kind of back to group texting because so many people are on so many different services, and I'm just really grateful that like Facebook Messenger never really took off in my family. It just didn't, it didn't work. But you know, we strayed. You know, we have a handful of iPhone users that are the problem users. Because of iMessage, they don't get the same kind of consistency of getting texts and updates and alerts and notifications, because we're just on group MMS. It's funny, like we're actually trying to have to help the little pocket of iPhone users because the rest of us are fine. And unlike most of us now are on more modern Pixels. My dad just got the Pixel 4a. So now my sister and her husband and my brother are all on Pixels, and my dad just joined with a Pixel. My mom's still on her OnePlus 6T. You know, like RCS messaging is actually now working real well for us, for all of those extra enhanced chat features. It's hilarious that an iPhone user jumps into a group texting thread and they're the ones that are getting left out. So this can evolve. This can get better for Android users. I think Signal is probably the way to go. I don't know. I mean, like Telegram also has some interesting features. There are some questions about its sort of open protocol, whether or not it's end-to-end encrypted. That would definitely be one in the comments here as you're joining this chat. Like, what would you point your family to? Because we know that trying to get your family to change their behavior is extremely difficult. If they got on the WhatsApp train, they just want to stay on the WhatsApp train. But how would we encourage? You know, like when Hangouts started falling apart and we were doing a lot of video calls through Hangouts, I just started Duo. I just started forcing people to use Duo. And Duo has worked pretty well for just a quick phone conversation. It's now kind of baked into the Messenger app, so it's a lot easier. Someone just taps the little video icon and we're having a video call. But it was like constant reinforcement. I would get a message on Hangouts and then I would purposely go to call that person on Duo. Even out to my grandmother. My grandmother has an iPad. That's like her main computing platform. She has no issues sending video voicemails through Duo. Took a minute, but we got there. So I don't know, what are other people using in this realm that like kind of helps move the needle? Because you know, your parents probably don't care about the minutia of WhatsApp privacy security issues, but you can help them, you can help make them care a little bit. From Blue Malicious, me and a friend have convinced two group chats to move from WhatsApp and Facebook to Signal, so they weren't chuffed when it went down, but have stuck with us and we're all still on there. Never thought I'd see the day. JMX Warrior, been using RCS. Walt Samarista, my family uses Viber. I keep forgetting about Viber as being kind of another alternative to WhatsApp. JMX Warrior is also pointing people to Signal. My whole family's on Signal too. Been very lucky that my family are really open-minded. And Hakey's also saying Signal is the way to go. Let's see. From Azran, my family overseas has been hooked on WhatsApp for years and they will hear nothing about changing to anything. It's insane how reliant on it they have become. I mean, I hate to be the, you know, the rock in someone's shoe, but like, you know, when Hangouts started falling apart, it wasn't an easy transition. It was kind of painful, but literally every single time I'd get the notification, someone wants to video chat with you on Hangouts, and I would hang up and I would call them back on a Duo. It's like, I'm not doing this. I actually kind of had a briefly snarky exchange with TK. TK was sending me some voice memos in text. And I just can't, because like if there's good information in a voice memo, I'll never find it again. If you write out the text, I can look back through the texts and find the piece of information. We were war driving for millimeter wave 5G, and like I'd get like a minute long voice. I'm not gonna sit and re-listen to minute long voice messages. I mean, like I was trying to send you like the intersection where I got a good 5G signal and you were trying to tell me where like you got a good cheeseburger and you're like, no. So I push back against that kind of stuff pretty hard. My family kind of already knows it from me that I'm going to be a thorn in their sides if they try and hit me like that. It's just kind of funny. Let's see. Let's get this out of the way. And Al Spockley also saying Viber became pretty big in Europe a couple of years ago. My entire family switched to Viber while I was hanging around Skype. Oh, Skype. Again, like such a huge, like I like the newest version and build of Skype. It's actually not a terrible service, but man, especially like post Zoom, like now I've got a bunch of family that only wants to Zoom call all the time. Aditya saying my parents and I interact via Telegram, but my extended family are reliant on WhatsApp. And I think Blue Malicious says, I think in the EU, we're protected at least for now from some of the WhatsApp changes. But the point I've been making is just because we are now, you can already see the trend. Better to get ahead of it so you're not stuck when they finally do something you won't accept. But again, it's also kind of the, things might change, but we want to make sure there's competition that we can switch to when those things change. This is a story I'm honestly not super qualified to dig into the nuts and bolts of. I'm not really hip to the advertising world. I'm pretty bad at trying to untangle all of the ad speak for digital marketing. But it's definitely something we should be concerned about. And when I got kind of excited about the story, it almost immediately sucked all of the excitement wind out of my excitement sails. So this is Facebook and Google have been accused of striking a secret illegal advertising deal. I believe this was first reported on by, was it the New York Times? I can't remember who did, but I caught it first on Business Insider, written up by Isabel Asher Hamilton. A coalition of state attorneys general is accusing Google of striking an illegal under-the-table deal with Facebook. The coalition, led by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, on Wednesday filed an antitrust lawsuit against Google. The suit accuses Google of unfairly leveraging monopoly power in its ad tech business. Now, really trying to untangle what went down here, and I am grossly oversimplifying with my oversimplified knowledge of how this went down, please read the entire Business Insider article. It does a better job of actually kind of explaining the nuance. But essentially, Google was looking to position a certain type of ad. Facebook had its eyes on those types of ads. So it reached out to Google to say, hey, if you back off what we want, we'll back off where you're most successful. As near as I can understand, this was definitely some mutual back scratching in the world of online advertising. So why did I get really excited about this? Is because increasingly I'm kind of for mega tech companies if they can't live up to some kind of consumer regulatory policy or consumer protection standard, then I feel they should be broken up. And the more data we have to show that they do not act in good faith and they leverage their market position to chill competition, then we need to act. We need to start the process of getting into their business and making sure they don't cause consumer harms. So let me get later into the article here. And this is kind of Business Insider also sort of quoting some stuff from Wired. Wired apparently also has a really good write-up on this too. Per Wired, if this deal is proved to be true, it could spell big trouble for Google and Facebook as it would fall under Section 1 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Section 1 forbids entities from striking agreements that unreasonably restrain trade, and the threshold for establishing illegality is relatively low. Excuse me. Quote, if you can prove an agreement between two firms, once you have proof of that agreement, it is called per se illegal. Sally Hubbard, a director at the anti-monopoly think tank The Open Markets Institute, told Wired. Quote, this is why antitrust enforcers love to bring Section 1 cases, because if you can find evidence of more than one firm agreeing to fix prices, agreeing not to compete, agreeing to allocate a market, once you prove that agreement, it's automatically illegal. It ends there. So if investigators and attorneys general really do have this smoking gun communication between Google and Facebook, that's a pretty open and shut case. Like it doesn't get easier. It shouldn't be one of those situations where 15 years from now, we're still in appeals debating the merits of one argument and whether or not it created consumer harms. We're still going to go through rounds of appeals, but it shouldn't be as easy for these megacorps to kind of weasel out through technicalities and through loopholes in these different laws. This one should be more straightforward. So I'm getting really excited, right? Like Dave Burns, anti-competitive practices, antitrust laws. Let's do this. Well, the very next paragraph from what I just read just totally sucked the air out of my lungs. Here's, you know, it's automatically illegal. It ends there. Per Reuters, corporations that violate Section 1 of the Sherman Anti... Per Reuters, corporations that violate Section 1 of the Sherman Act face penalties of up to $100 million. $100 million. For two companies that quarterly talk about billions in earnings, that's barely a blip to a quarterly financial. That's not even a tax on their businesses. I'm sure Facebook and Google will really learn their lesson once they get hit with that $100 million fine on years of business practices. I believe these cases start tracking data back in like 2018. And business practices that have generated billions in revenue and billions in profit, that $100 million penalty, man, that's really going to twist some ears. That's really going to slap some wrists. Ooh, ow. Ah, we learned our lesson. Dave Burns, it's a mild inconvenience. They just factor that into their losses and write them off. It's not even a mild inconvenience. Like in their expenditures, they probably have a bucket of what to pay out when we break the law. Like that's where we're at. Oh man, burn notice here. Winning for the small man is only an illusion, a distraction in the corporate world. So here's the only thing that still gives me some excitement or generates some hope. In this is the $100 million fine ain't going to do anything. $100 million fine is not even going to register on their profits, especially over a year. No shareholders even going to care that they had to, you know, pay out $100 million. But these two companies are being aggressively investigated for other business practices, and this speaks to the core competency and the core leadership of these companies. When they go into deliberating on whether or not these companies abuse their market power, abuse their leverage, they'll have a case on the books pointing directly to a tangible consumer harm right here. It's a token victory. It's a show victory. It does almost nothing to actually affect change in the corporate world. But it's a data point that hopefully we can leverage to force some better or some smarter regulations on this industry. We're a decade behind. Our legal system and our political system and our lawmakers are a decade behind the realities of what the online data environment really resembles. This kind of stuff can hopefully catch us up. But as soon as I saw that fine, that the fine is not a sliding scale of the benefits that they or the profits that they made from this business practice, it's just up to $100 million. Well, you know, like back in the 60s when this law was originally written, I have no idea when the Sherman Act. Let's look up. When was the Sherman Act written? Let's try a voice search on Google. Maybe Google will serve me an ad from Facebook. When was the Sherman Act implemented into law?
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, so I was off. I was thinking it was the 30s. The original core backbone of this law was written in 1890. Failed American history right there for you folks, and I did it live. So we're taking the core backbone of a law written in the 1890s and probably updated for these penalties and fines. I don't know. To me, it's got to be like, you know, like early 50s or 60s, but 100 million. Oh, man. Oof. Oh, Aditi is telling me that I need to stretch. So I'm a stretch. And just like we should be protecting the, you know, the memory card, I am also wearing my protect the headphone jack. If we could save that headphone jack. you know, available at your favorite Gadget Guy merch store online retailer. So, Paul Purry. Hey Siri, when did the Sherman Act start? Siri, calling Sherman Williams. All right. And Squishy Man, 2007, the jack is still why I keep an iPhone 6 around, right there with you. I'm never letting go of my original iPhone SE. It's glorious. So we got one more news story. I'm almost caught up to news, right? Like I try and do an hour for housekeeping and news, and I'm just going to go a little bit over. I'm really excited. This podcast, like I said, I'm all fired up. This is the podcast to really share if you like your tech cranky. So in another example of mega corporations totally learning their lessons, we're going to talk more about the Galaxy S21. The person who's likely going to lead Samsung, the next generation of chairman of leadership at Samsung, is a criminal and is going back to prison. So Samsung heir Jay Lee is going back to jail for bribery. This is a story on Engadget written up by Steve Dent. Samsung heir J.Y. Lee has been sentenced to 2.5 years of prison over bribery charges, wrapping up a court battle that started 4 years ago. Lee was originally jailed for 5 years back in 2017, but walked free after just a year when his original term was suspended on appeal. South Korea's Supreme Court overturned that decision and ordered a new trial in August of 2019. Lee was arrested as part of the corruption scandal involving South Korean President Park. I can't pronounce this very easily. Park Gwan-yi. Please, is it Park? It's a softer R, right? It's almost like a Boston R. Park Gwan-yi, who was herself the first female president of South Korea, sentenced to 20 years in prison for influence peddling. Lee was found guilty of using his wealth to influence Park on Samsung's business interests, including a merger of two Samsung units. Prosecutors had initially pushed for a 12-year sentence for Lee to show that even Samsung wasn't above the law. They did not get a 12-year sentence. Walt Samarista is saying Park Gwan-yi. Park Gwan-yi? Is it more of a puck or a pock? I don't know. Anyway, so this is big news because, you know, companies in South Korea almost have kind of like a dynastic rule. Lee is saying he's not going to pass on Samsung. Actually, you know what? Let me finish up the article because I'm going to be giggling and laughing hilariously at how tragic and unfair the rich have it. While in jail, Lee may be unable to make major decisions for Samsung at a crucial time when demand for its memory chips and other products are sky high. Reminder, those Samsung memory chips were also in we're in deliberation over price fixing scandals and collusion with other competing outlets where Samsung worked with other memory manufacturers to jack up the prices of memory and flash storage. Again, Samsung abusing its market leader position to better its profit margins. In the trial's final hearing, Lee made a lengthy apology and promised to make a new Samsung and, quote, fix what the court has pointed out as the harms of family-owned conglomerates. He also vowed not to pass power down to his children. I don't feel it's a good idea to let kids just sort of take over the reins of mega corporations, unless they're really good at running those corporations. It's this last paragraph that has me all kinds of giggle-pated. The sentence was based in part on the court's evaluation of an independent compliance committee set up by Samsung to monitor wrongdoing by executives. I'm going to say that again because it needs to be said again. The sentence was based in part on the court's evaluation of an independent compliance committee set up by Samsung to monitor the wrongdoing by executives. We here at Samsung have investigated ourselves and we find we don't need to levy as much jail time. He needs less jail time because we investigated ourselves. It gets a little bit better. Lee's legal woes aren't over yet, as he's also on trial for alleged fraud and stock manipulation. So this isn't just like, oh, well, I was trying to lobby the former president of South Korea. Outside of those influence elements, no, he's just a straight up crook. He's just a crook. Alleged fraud and stock manipulations. He is in line to be in charge of the world's largest consumer electronics brand, and he's playing stock manipulation games. But you know, you want to put the final pin in this? You really want the kicker? You really want the kicker? Let's listen to this. After all of this, Lee's legal woes aren't over yet, as he's also on trial for alleged fraud and stock manipulation. He's still expected to become chairman of Samsung once he goes free. I mean, tell me how that's not like The Godfather, you know? Like, just don't implicate any of your buddies. Keep your mouth shut. You got a job when you get out. You're good. He still looks... how perfect is it to cap the article at the end there? He's on trial for alleged fraud and stock manipulations. He's still not going to be in charge. Nothing's going to change. He will face no consequences, no penalties, and Samsung influencing the South Korean courts and government are going to be willing to listen to their recommendation that he serve less jail time. Oh, man. I just, you know, it's frustrating. It's proper frustrating. You got to laugh to keep from, burn notice. It's disappointed laughter. You know, again, it's if we really played into this game, where, man, we are under the boot heel of these insanely large tech corporations. And you know, like, it definitely gives me some anxiousness because, like, I'm a tech nerd and I live my life out of tech and I just so genuinely and passionately enjoy this gig. But if we can't call this out, what good are we? I just, man, he's still expected to become chairman of Samsung once he goes free. All right. Let's knock out the subreddit because we don't need to spend a lot of time on the subreddit because I totally kicked butt on the subreddit this week. This is maybe one of my strongest showings ever on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is a little community, especially those of you who might be tuning in fresh to this podcast. If you're concerned about how Google's algorithm for YouTube mostly focuses on tentpole popularity, and when you go to subscribe to a smaller channel, they shove bigger content creators in your face, and they're constantly manipulating the order of videos that are published so that they try to keep you only focused on the most popular trending topics. We're trying to chip away at that. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles is a community free for anyone, content creators or content fans, to share content they think deserves a little bit more attention. I mean, the only requirement is a loose focus on nerdcore and tech. But I mean, we've shared content from, like, you know, movie reviewers, and I have a love of Junkball. They make a bunch of Star Trek things because I'm a Star Trek nerd. But if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a much broader and much larger tech community than what YouTube wants to serve you. And we only have 1,500 members. I mean, we're growing organically and regularly every week, but it's really grassroots. We're not trying to play games. We're not trying to hype up. We're not trying to game the metrics. These are real interactions and real upvotes and real people contributing to this community. This week, and this is not often that this happens, in fact, for the last couple of weeks, I have not been high on the list, high on the charts, but the most popular, the A number one with a bullet, Samsung is killing the SD card. Can we save it from some gadget guy? Some doofus in a really cool flat cap, but with a punchable face, leading the way. Feels so good. Someone please send a message out to Matt Tyler. Schooled him. A win. Someone let Ted know. Saeed Ted, nailed it. Me. I promise you, Glowing Rectangles is not a me subreddit, even though I made it. It is not a regular occurrence for my videos to be at the top. But man, something seems to be resonating with my video about the SD card being removed from the Galaxy S21. Much to the chagrin of three Samsung Knights in the comments on my video. Three Samsung Knights are very upset that other people seem to be agreeing with me that this is a lame business practice from Samsung. Moving right along, just kind of tacking the rest of these because, man, I just so strong. I did real good this week, but real stoked. A Stadia controller review coming from Team Vry with 1.19 thousand subscribers. A channel on the rise. It's been exciting watching Team Vry putting out YouTube content since they were under 1,000 subs and then building from there. In third place, my interview with the folks with Franco over at Audio 46. This is such a great conversation. I really dug this conversation. Franco he's got a future as a podcast host and interviewer. Just such a personable and likable tone to his conversations, and not what you would expect from kind of a dyed in the wool audiophile. Like, really trying to work against that gatekeepery. Now, what you need to do is look at the signal to noise response graph. EQ. Franco's a cool dude. And again, I'm saying that because he had me on a show. But in talking to him on a show, really excited to subscribe to his podcast. Moving on, using a 4-year-old mid-ranger. I got, what is this? I got first. I was the interviewee on third, Animasu in fourth place, with fifth place coming in Joshua Vergara, Samsung Galaxy Buds Pro review, quiet down and speak up. We've got Tech Odyssey looking at BlackBerry selling patents to Huawei. Team Vry back at it, iPod Touch using iOS 14.3. And we've got Preston's Thoughts, 377 subscribers, looking at LG and TCL teasing rollable phones. Again, how often is it that you're going to see in your YouTube subscription feed, YouTube really putting up someone with under 500 subs? It doesn't happen very often on mine. And when I subscribed to Preston's Thoughts, I was immediately asked to also follow Mr. Who's the Boss And you must also want to watch Unbox Therapy. Those channels have millions of subscribers. Isn't that what you really want? So if you want to get away from that YouTube involvement in your feed, please consider dropping by, saying, hey, we've got a really fun crew over at reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And it doesn't have to be from smaller content creators. It's really, the mission is any content you feel deserves more attention. And so it could be someone with a bunch of subs, but maybe they're not doing so well. Maybe they're struggling under this current flavor of YouTube algorithm. We need to be the community that helps change that. We're getting so many amazing submissions. My call to action, my plea, and I hope you will all follow it. For this community to really grow and build, we need to move beyond just self-promoting and dumping a video and walking away. If we're really going to own up to the mission of helping these individual content creators, we need to start interacting just a little bit more. More upvotes. Click that up arrow. This is a community of people. They're like-minded. I mean, chances are pretty good you're going to like, you know, just seeing a variety of content in your feed, but then also comments, joining a conversation and really contributing to a conversation in a way that kind of helps reinforce what these content creators are doing. You know, if someone's just shouting out into the vacuum and they don't get any feedback or they don't get any response, eventually they stop making stuff. And that's not what we want. We want to encourage and we want to see that we can support them, even if it's not necessarily a direct monetization kind of support. Any type of engagement is going to be valuable in helping them find more success. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and tell them one sent you, because who you tell when you tell them will probably be me. So tell me that I sent you to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Blue Malicious, I watched a great video earlier and shared it on the subreddit a few hours ago from a guy called Kevin Muldoon about an Audio Technica microphone. I think he has 14,000 subs, but it was a fun video. Bam. And I pushed upvote on that video because I'm an audio snob. And Audio Technica is a good brand to highlight for audio snobs. All right. So who wants to talk about like a Galaxy or something? A lot of this is going to be a bit of paraphrasing. Getting into the gadget block here. And those of you who are sharing like on public, on sort of social media and stuff, now would be the time to say like, oh, who wants to complain about the Galaxy S21? Come here now. Woo! Quite a bit of this is going to be kind of paraphrasing some of the conversation that I had with TK from our Thursday stream. I want to highlight that live stream one more time. Because I feel like if you followed me at all, I think you got a pretty good handle on my vibe. I enjoy a playful snark, sort of a Disneyfied cynicism regarding the tech community. I have legitimate and like honestly, I'm very anxious about some of the concerns facing consumers in this new electronics frontier, especially over the last year, for how hard we lean on our consumer electronics and we let casual ignorance kind of lead the conversation. You know, the number of people that are still kind of feeling like, oh, you know, desktop computers, how ancient. Oh, look at those dinosaurs. But you look at sales data and man, 2020, desktop computer sales were really strong. I feel like a lot of techies are proper bad at reading the room, and the room being the global economy outside of their little echo chambers of gadget fandom. So I kind of feel like y'all have a good grip on that. Like, look at what I just did there. I just went right back into soapboxing mode. I'm pretty easy to sidetrack on this kind of stuff. What I think is kind of telling in my chat with TK was, I think this is the most critical I've ever heard TK. And TK has a reputation for really finding the joy in a lot of these things that I'm often sneering at. TK has a reputation for really building that community and that audience about getting the most out of your gadgets and, you know, the software that's really going to complement this hardware experience. And really, I mean, like, you want the deep granular dives on how a product functions. There are few people as qualified to talk about individual features and the complete holistic experience of the phone than TK Bay. And even for me, we were getting into, like, I don't know, about 40 minutes into that podcast. And even I was kind of trying to pull TK back from the edge a little bit regarding some of the changes that have befallen the Galaxy S line. I feel validated and vindicated in the worst way that the Galaxy S21 is a cynical product release that is designed to generate feel-good headlines. Oh, look, the S21 is going to be cheaper than the S20 it replaces. But it doesn't replace the S20. In many consumer-focused ways, it is a downgrade from the S20. And especially considering that it's not hard finding the original Galaxy S20, you know, the base model. We're not talking S20 Plus. We're not talking S20 Ultra. We're talking base model S20. I can easily find it for $500. I can sometimes do a little bit of creative shopping, or if I shop used, I can find it for like $450. It is generally more phone, just with a slightly slower processor, than what the S21 is. That kind of lifestyle and holistic consumer gadget experience matters, right? I'm willing to put up with a slightly slower chipset if I get a bunch of other functionality. Like, I'm not a chipset cheapskate. I want, so that's what I'm focused on. I want the entire pocket computer to be more, not less. So Samsung put out their feel-good marketing. Their press conference for the S21 was largely a waste of time and really fell into the tropes and traps of like an Apple keynote, where it's kind of feel-good and aspirational commentary on a product, how it's going to revolutionize this, or how it's going to impact, or how it's going to change your life with these amazing features. And none of that really comes to pass. We oversell these products, and then consumers walk away from that conversation feeling like, no, I didn't really get my money's worth. Like, look at, you know, we saw another one of those headlines. I should have pulled up the article. 9 out of 10 smartphone consumers don't see any benefit to buying a new smartphone. Well, yeah, because we keep selling them on covering the basics and then trying to convince them that they need to spend $800 plus on doing the exact same things they've been doing for the last 5 to 8 years. The Galaxy S21 should be an aspirational product. It should live in a conversation where this product is designed and built to help people accomplish more. But that's not really, I mean, they make those claims and, oh, professional grade cameras, but they don't really live it. They don't really live up to that. Again, you know, like firing up the camera on a Sony versus firing up the camera on a Samsung, one is definitely built more for pros than the other. Blue Malicious. The S21 is cheaper because it's less good and has less features. But it, look, it costs less, guys. So I've got Samsung's website pulled up here. I mean, we can kind of just scroll through this. You know, again, watch as they kind of conflate, you know, here's the S21 Ultra, and look at how amazing and impressive this is, epic in every way. Okay, I guess. I think the thing that I'm walking away from when I look at where we went from the S20 Ultra to the S21 Ultra, I'm sure Samsung has fixed the autofocus, because autofocus on the 20 series devices was spooky and terrible. Using the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra, that autofocus is not good. That is a really expensive phone with an incredible camera sensor, and it matters if you're not nailing the focus. And it is easy on the Note 20 Ultra to not land the focus when you're trying to quickly like tap and snap, right? Click and go. So many frustrating experiences with that phone camera. So I had every expectation that we'd be talking about space zoom and 100x zoom and the ability to properly focus on objects. But a Nana cell, a 9:1 sub-pixel binning setup, I have low expectations that the autofocus on a Galaxy S21 Ultra is going to keep up with the autofocus on like an Xperia 1 Mark II. As soon as you point an Xperia 1 Mark II at someone's face, and without you doing anything, it locks on their eyeball, Terminator vision style, that feels real good. Samsung, not as good. But the one thing I am actually really, really happy to see in terms of their construction and design is Samsung finally acknowledging that their large domino camera modules have always been kind of a bad design. It's now they're encasing this domino in metal. And it's something that they really should have started doing since the, I don't know, I'm moving into like the Note 10 era, but especially with the Galaxy S era, the S20 era, was this large lump that sticks out the back of the phone, which is largely going to be the leverage point where the phone is laid flat on its back. And we see numerous people having issues with that back glass almost kind of exploding because it was a different kind of piece and component of pressure that was all kind of locked up to cover and protect the camera modules on this phone. And again, it's all anecdotal, but seeing some of those comments from people on forums like, well, I tried getting it replaced, but Samsung just says it's cosmetic damage. That's a really expensive phone to suffer a somewhat catastrophic failure of the water resistance and the functionality of the camera module for Samsung to be like, yeah, I don't think we can cover that. Blue Malicious asks a great question here. Well, first of all, TK Bay says, I love my Xperia 1 Mark II's eye autofocus, because anyone who seriously shoots and has actually used an Xperia more than just for making a snarky, poorly expressed review on YouTube, that is a tangible benefit. But Blue Malicious, this is a very good question. Anyone know the benefit of having a 108 megapixel sensor binned to 12 megapixels instead of keeping that same size sensor and just making it native to 12 MP? Okay. We are in a battle of competing camera sensor technologies. I was actually going to save this for a conversation with a Sony executive, a Sony scientist in their camera division. And I'm still probably going to try and make this video, but right here, we'll spoil it in the middle of my podcast. Pixel binning is when you have multiples of the same colored pixels in a different type of grid array. We know RGB, so red, green, blue, and it's usually just one subpixel apart. So there will be a red subpixel, then a green subpixel, then a red subpixel, then a blue subpixel. And it's really easy. You're only ever one subcolor away from another like subcolor. Pixel binning, a quad Bayer sensor, makes it 4. The 108 megapixel sensor makes it 9. So there are 9 red subpixels, then 9 green subpixels, then 9 red subpixels again. That means from one red pixel to another, you can have as many as 7 other subpixels in between. It's why I don't really like calling these by their full technical subpixel counts. It is technically 108 megapixels, but you do have to demosaic those subpixels in a different way to arrive at a 108 megapixel image. So you do lose clarity over what a real 108 megapixel traditional Bayer filtered sensor would deliver. So what's the advantage? Well, the advantage is having this larger photo site that can not only soak up more light, but each of those red subpixels can capture a different exposure value. So in a quad bear, you could have one subpixel capture a brighter image and one subpixel capture a medium image. And you could probably also throw in a darker image to combine all of that color and light data for that one color subpixel and squish that into a much faster and much a contrastier, a better dynamic range for an HDR photo. This is the critical advantage over the larger but lower resolution sensors. So like, again, I've been pointing out, I don't know where I put it. Oh, it's over here. So like my Xperia 1 Mark II has a 12 megapixel sensor, but it's a larger sensor. It's about the same size as the 64 megapixel sensor in the V60. And it's, what's the other one? No, it's a little smaller than the 48 in the OnePlus 8 Pro. But again, similar ideas, right? Now, why wouldn't we just go with the better HDR processing? Why would Sony use a lower resolution sensor, even though it's larger? It can't do all of these fun pixel binning or HDR subsampling tricks. We haven't caught up yet on these megapixel dense quad bear and nanocell sensors. We haven't caught up for autofocus. That really snappy, like Wolverine's claws, snick snick, super speedy autofocus comes from that dual pixel technology that we've started with the Galaxy S7, and it's kind of taken over that 12 megapixel sensor. You know, again, what kind of made the iPhone a little snappier? Dual pixel PDAF. We can kind of fudge it and we can kind of get close, but what Sony can accomplish with that eye tracking and that super fast reaction as you're doing bursts of photos through the Photo Pro app can only be accomplished through a combination of that dual pixel technology and software properly reading it. So we've got to make a compromise somewhere. Either we get the amazing dynamic range and HDR processing capabilities of a pixel binning sensor, or we go with the razor sharp, super fast, lightning quick autofocus performance of the larger but lower resolution sensors. And right now, we can't really quite bridge that gap. And something tells me when you have one of those multi-pixel arrays, that pixel binning sensors, it's really hard to say, well, this combination of pixels has dual pixel autofocus, but it's also spread out over, you know, like 16 individual subpixels. Autofocus doesn't really work like that yet. I imagine it will soon, but this is something we can't bridge. This is a technology we can't combine. I bet Sony will figure it out probably in 2022, maybe 2023, but it's going to take us a while to get there.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
And just from people, you know, asking, like, you look at the OnePlus 8 Pro, and actually, you know, looking at Quad Bear versus the Nano Cell in a Samsung, I actually kind of think that the low light images, like especially the raw captures on the OnePlus 8 Pro, were, I don't know, just texturally a little bit better than what Samsung was doing with the Note 20 Ultra. But anyway, back to the S21. I would have every expectation that Samsung has at least fixed the autofocus for the 108 megapixel sensor and also for the space zoom, but it's not going to be as razor quick, as razor wire fast as what like Sony can accomplish with last year's Xperia. Again, it's I kind of want to get where I just want to get back into the other phones here, because, you know, you click on, ooh, pre-order the Galaxy S21 Ultra, and they're like, hey, check out this. And you've got to kind of dig to a smaller link. And I'm looking at the S21. Can I just get to the key features? Are you going to, ah, man, Samsung, come on. All right, I gotta back out of this. Let's see if I can do this without my internet connection tanking. Galaxy 5G, 5G devices, just send me, there we go. Galaxy S21 5G, explore the lineup. S21 and S21 Plus. Everyday epic. I mean, just such big claims and super high resolution camera and 8K video. Wow, you can shoot 8K video just like you could last year on camera sensors that are nearly identical to what's on the Galaxy S20. I mean, the same weird collection of camera specs where that 64 megapixel sensor is the zoom, and it's not physically zoomed. It's just a pixel binning. It's just a pixel crop for your zoom. But you know, 8K video tends to take up a little bit more storage, doesn't it? Man, sure would be a bummer if you wanted to shoot that crispy 8K video and you bought the base model, which doesn't have enough storage to really keep up with what's going on with your video. And again, so much of Samsung's language now has completely veered. You know, when the Z Flip is announced and they're like, this is a statement phone. Just say you're a fashion label now. Just say you're trying to be like Apple and you're trying to make this a lifestyle fashion brand. Don't kind of crouch it behind like, you know, oh, aspirational technology. No, we just want you to flex. It's a statement phone. The S21 is made to turn heads. In a world where, for probably at least the next 6 months, we're still not going to be going out in public, you too can show off your S21 to nobody. Maybe when you're on a Zoom call with your coworkers, you can flash your Thanos purple S21. Screen dimensions, and again, now they're doing the Apple thing of not telling you like what the screens are. The Infinity O display, it's 1080p. I mean, that's not bad. It's fine. 1080p is totally livable on even 60 hertz displays. I still regularly keep my SIM card in my LG V60. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with it, but it's less phone than you got with the S20. And again, for all the people that were sleeping on the OnePlus 8 Pro last year, OnePlus was able to combine quad HD with 120 hertz. We're just now getting to that with a more variable refresh rate on the S21 Ultra. Samsung couldn't do it on their phones last year, and this year they're not even trying. You're buying less screen. I know some people don't care about that extra resolution. Some people do. Now you don't have an option unless you climb to a $1,200 starting price phone. So, moving right along. Dynamic AMOLED, eye comfort shield, and super smooth 120 hertz display. Don't you feel? Samsung's really, really on the feels. I really feel this phone. Vibrant in violet, and sleek in silver, and bold in black. I don't want you all to forget that during the keynote for the S21 Ultra, they spent more time talking about the black material casing than they did any other feature on the phone. Samsung invented black on the S21 Ultra. Doesn't that feel a lot like kind of an Apple thing? You're like, ooh, rose gold. This is, again, I mean, like, I'm still going to recommend you put a case on your phone. Cool. You made the black. TK Bay, what do you think it will feel like in the hand? I don't know. I mean, like, Samsung probably built this for octopi space aliens with tentacles. So it doesn't really, you know, I don't think it feels very nice in the hand. I think it feels more like a tentacle phone. If you have tentacles instead of an opposable thumb, I think it's going to feel really good for you. I mean, if that's what you're into. Total eye candy. I am happy to see Gorilla Glass Victus on the front, obviously. We're not talking about the back of the phone, because the back of the phone is plastic that's designed to look like shiny glass. And again, it's a criticism that we saw. Who did that video? TechAlter. TechAlter did a comparison between, was it an Oppo or a Xiaomi? But anyway, they were comparing a phone that's a little bit more powerful to a phone like the LG Velvet. And TechAlter did a great breakdown. This is a phone that looks really good in pictures online, but when you hold it in your hand, you can definitely feel some of the material compromises. And LG, with the Velvet, made a phone that is going to really impress if you walk into a store and you pick it up and handle it, that it will feel like a much more expensive device in the material, the casing, and the components that they opted for. The S21 is absolutely designed to look prettier and shinier and glassier in these online images while they're using a shiny plastic. And this is another reason why I'm saying you're going to need to put a case on this, because plastic that looks like glass is going to be more susceptible to abrasions and nicks and scratches and roughed up. Over the life of that phone, it's going to dull more than glass might. Glass is going to crack, and we know all kinds of people in our circles of family and friends with cracked backs on their phones, but this isn't a high-quality, matte-finished polycarb. If the plastic were more like a Lumia, I would be way more excited about this, because when you scratch a Lumia, the plastic is that color all the way down. It's not paint. The plastic is already dyed all throughout to be that color. So, like, my Big Bird Yellow Lumia 1520 has all kinds of dents and nicks and scratches because I never put a case on that phone. But when I just used that phone, well, past tense, when I used that phone, you couldn't see them very easily because the scratch would just show off more of the yellow. It wasn't like a scratch that chipped away at paint. So I'm not a big fan of plastic that's designed to look like glass. It's going to look cheap faster than plastic that's got a matte finish or is a higher, like I said, a higher quality polycarb. But again, it's the shiny, it's the pretty, it's the flashy right now. And, you know, like, most average consumers buy $1,000 phone like every year, according to tech bloggers, I guess. 8K video. Whoa, look at this. Super steady. Man, that's so exciting. Samsung has, what is it, 1080p video that looks a little bit smoother? I mean, you can do that on a Pixel, right? The normal image stabilization on 4K 60 frame per second video from an LG, pretty much the same. You really want to get fancy? Why not go gimbal? You know, the Samsung have a phone with a gimbal camera? Because I'll tell you really want that epic Michael Bay wraparound shot as your kids are playing on a jungle gym. My home videos of Lex playing at the park have gotten a little more cinematic since I've started using these gimbal phones. It's a resolution revolution. Lame. So again, resolution revolution. It's a resolution revolution, but these cameras are essentially the same as they were last year. 12 megapixel ultra wide, 12 megapixel standard, 64 megapixel telephoto. Those are the same. Just like Apple, we complained that the Pixel isn't using a newer or more powerful or more expensive sensor. Remember, we were complaining about that on the Pixel 5. Techies were like, oh man, what is Google doing? They're charging less, but man, they're using the same old camera sensor. And then Apple did it, and we stopped complaining about older 12 megapixel shooters. I feel we're being a little inconsistent in our criticisms, but I digress. Simon says, Hypno, meet the new camera. Same as the old camera. I mean, what I'm hoping for and what I'm expecting is that they're fixing the terrible autofocus performance. And that's why they're going with the 12 megapixel sensor. Yeah, did you catch that? 12 megapixel sensor for the main shooter. That's the sensor that's better for autofocus. That 64 megapixel monster, not as good for autofocus. I just want to kind of round this all out. Whoa, the beauty is in the details. Gah. This is actually one thing that I am kind of happy to see. So instantly Insta-ready, right? It's not so much their, oh, look at how amazing our selfies and our background blur is. It's more, Samsung is one of the only companies outside of Apple that can leverage their market size to encourage social media apps to really use their camera APIs. So this is actually one thing, like if you're sharing a lot on Snapchat or Instagram or any of these other, or like TikTok, especially services that started iPhone first, this could be a good reason to look at a Samsung as an investment if you want to stick with the Android ecosystem, because an app developer is going to look at the, you know, the market share of an LG or of a Sony and go, do we really want to work to support that? Just dump it on Samsung. So that could be kind of a benefit. Those uploads, that social media content, that kind of sharing, it is. It's going to look a little nicer coming from a Samsung than from a lot of other Android devices. To me, that's also kind of a commentary why we need to improve competition, is I feel those social media services should be working better to support some of the camera APIs that would be a benefit across the industry. And it's also a fair criticism to point to like LG, where they're using a lot of their own proprietary camera software to make their experience better. But it does kind of get in the way of using a social media service. This is where we work to improve competition. We don't just give up and say, oh, I guess I just need to Snapchat on my $1,200 Samsung, I guess. It's nuanced. It's shades of gray. And just kind of rounding this all out, I'm really not impressed. It's a lower resolution display. It's made out of less expensive materials. And even when I want to be happy about some of the, like the material changes, like, you know, the screen is a flat front face. I feel that's a consumer perk. I feel the phones are more practical without curved edges. I'm gonna be a little, I mean, honestly, for my own personal use, if the next LG phone has a curved screen, I'm gonna be disappointed by that. That is gonna be a little bit of a bummer for me. I don't like that as much. I don't really think it feels any nicer. It makes the phone a little bit thinner. You know, the width of the phone gets pulled into the frame just a little fraction bit better, but it's not much. The thing is, it's a more expensive manufacturing technique. So I don't feel like Samsung is really looking at the consumer experience on Galaxy phones and saying, well, you know, our users, they really want flat screens again. They're looking at like, how do we make the S21 even cheaper? The S21 is not a replacement to the S20. It's a way to charge more for an S20 FE replacement and remove additional features so that people are encouraged to spend even more on top of the more expensive version of an S20 FE. And that to me is just sort of cynical, and it doesn't celebrate a community. It's not any of these aspirational marketing bullet points. It's a way to make you feel unhappy with your current device. And then when you go to shop a new device, these little pain points that kind of encourage you to spend a little bit more. You don't want the base model. What if you shoot 8K video? You're going to need more storage. Now, but maybe you don't like the material feel on this plastic. Well, I mean, the Ultra, and the Ultra is going to have that great S Pen integration. And I mean, like, sure, it's a larger screen, so maybe you're gonna be happier with a higher resolution display, right? It's kind of sad. You know, I can go and pull out that my Galaxy S7. You know, take a look at that screen. Tiny, tiny size, and it's a 1440p display. It's not 1080. It's not like a Galaxy S10 SE. Galaxy S10e. I'm getting my Sam Apple brands confused. So I'm not feeling S21. I just want to wrap this up. I never want to wish ill of a company. I don't really feel it's good for the Android ecosystem if Samsung flops. Because really, if you're just a general consumer and you were kind of shopping some of these devices, if Samsung falters, especially here in North America, if Samsung falters, it's probably more likely that a consumer is going to go and look at Apple. I really need Samsung to be competitive. I really need them to look at target markets and demographics and really make the goodest products that they can. The Android ecosystem hinges on the winds of Samsung to kind of direct where we're going to be going. So it does not fill me with joy. It does not bring me joy when Samsung is now leveraging their market position to emulate Apple. I don't want that. Like I said earlier in this podcast, if I want a more iPhone-like device, I'm happy with a Pixel. That is an easy phone to recommend. But I turned to Samsung back in the day for the everything in the kitchen sink, the best experiments, the bleeding edge of hardware of these new technologies. And the S21 is not it. The entire S21 lineup is an iterative, minor spec bump over the S20 line and often represents more compromises. Think of all the times, like even back when I was doing the Bored at Work podcast, how many times we celebrated Samsung Pay. How great was Samsung Pay? Hey, you know, you're walking around here in the United States. It's taken us a long time to adopt like NFC payments. And by the time we do, we'll probably start moving over to like QR code payments just for less contact with our point of sale services. How great was it on Samsung Pay that it didn't matter what payment service they used? If it was Apple style, you could use NFC, or if it like was just a regular credit card swipe machine, you just wipe your phone on the side of the kiosk and you could also make a payment that way. All the jokes that we would tell, like, you got to be careful because someone might think you're hacking their cash register. You know, like Samsung Pay was amazing. And look at Dex. You know, Dex is a legitimate way to properly displace desktop and laptop use. You need to find some accessories to make Dex work, but if you do, like you grab yourself a Nex dock or you set up a portable, you know, a USB-C powered display, or you go through the crazy, the hassle, the insurmountable work of finding a $30 USB-C laptop hub that will give you USB ports, HDMI output, a memory card reader, and Ethernet over a single USB cable. I mean, this is really hard, folks. How could you even possibly do something like this and just plug it into your phone and then use your phone like a regular computer? Man, it's a good thing that average consumers don't try to ever do anything with their phones, because that's just a bridge too far. Losing memory card support makes the phone a little less useful. Losing, you know, a headphone jack makes the phone a little less useful. Losing screen resolution just feels like a way to gouge. It feels like a way to jack up the price rather than offer competitive market solution against their chief rival. Losing magstripe payments, that affects also the retail industry. And look at all of like the smaller shops that don't want to, you know, retrofit tap and pay solutions on their kiosks. They need to. They do. But we're not there yet. You know, why do you need a memory card when all of your photos are in the cloud? Except that Google's turning off that pipe for free, high-quality storage. So now really using the cloud is just going to be another subscription fee. Gonna have to pay another $2 to $3 a month if you just want kind of a basic bump to your cloud storage. And then that's going to max out really fast because it also uses the same bucket for your Google Drive and your Gmail storage. And all of this stuff is like that little lobster pot, just cranking the heat and just a little turn up here and a little turn up there. And you know what? I don't even miss the headphone jack anymore because I bought really expensive Bluetooth buds. Like that's not it. That's not it. There are people out there that genuinely need different products, different solutions, different services. And there's someone out there who wants all of the features and support of a mid-ranger device where they have memory cards and headphone jacks, but they want more horsepower, you know? That's sad. We should be upset by that. We should be bothered by it. And if anyone can casually dismiss a huge swath of consumers, not most consumers, but a significant chunk of consumers that care about this stuff, then yes, I would say that individual is bad at tech. I don't want Samsung to fail, but I kind of need the Galaxy S21 to not sell well. I really don't want it to be successful. I really kind of hope it's a tough buy. I would like kind of the compromises here to be highlighted like we had back in the Galaxy S6 days, right? Samsung took away removable batteries and SD card expansion in one shot and people got upset and we got one of those features back for the Galaxy S7. I hope something like that happens here. So Samsung, I know you're not listening because you definitely don't reply to any of my emails and, you know, we've kind of severed any hope of having a reasonable PR relationship. I want you to be better. I want to hold you to the standard that you claim to occupy and I want your products to live up to that. And you're not. So I would hope that consumers wait, see what else gets released in 2021 and that hopefully they consider some alternatives. I feel like there will be better ways to spend your money in 2021 than what Samsung is doing here. Just because I had it in the title and we're already running just a little bit long. And from Dave Burns, the A series is where we're going to see Samsung play ball. Again, anyone who's like average consumers and then they're talking about Galaxy S, that's another good bit of evidence that you are not good at tech. Galaxy A series grossly outsells Galaxy S. But I did want to just kind of mention really quickly, I don't know if I have any grand designs to use it, but I've been somewhat harsh and critical of the rollout for the service Clubhouse. If you're on the Patreon, I wrote kind of, I don't know, it's an editorial just sharing some of my experiences of how gross it can kind of be working in Hollywood for things like talent agencies, and I was a casting director, and it messes with your head. For me, some people really thrive on it. Oh, you're a casting director? Wow, you're so interesting, and everything you say is so funny, and give me a job. For me, I kind of had an opposite effect where I would go into meeting new people trying to set the absolute lowest expectations because I just couldn't handle when I'd try to get to know someone and then they found out what I did and how they'd suddenly perk up. And suddenly I was so interesting and so valuable in a relationship and we should go get coffee and I'd love to pick your brain. And it's so fake and it's so gross. And so there's this whole component of Clubhouse that's kind of being sold the same way. There's this whole structure of you'll get access to famous people and it can make your career. And isn't that amazing? And it's so exclusive and you need to have an invite and it only works on iPhones. And I don't like that. I really don't. I really don't like the hype runway being built on kind of exploiting people that are looking for help in their careers. The number of people that I've seen sharing tweets like, I was just in this Clubhouse room and it totally blew my mind. And now I'm so motivated and it's amazing. I caught a couple of videos like Clubhouse is the death of Android. You need to own an iPhone just so you can be on Clubhouse. And you're like, you know what? That's not it. It's really not. So what I finally got in Yes, they did allow me to finally get in. I joined a room, and I joined several. I was going through a bunch of just like, you know, marketing things, and you're like, this feels like the same kind of workshop that you could have streamed, you know, like I used to teach workshops at like Social Media Week, and I used to teach workshops for SAG, Screen Actors Guild. And it's kind of the same thing. It's like this roundtable discussion, and people can watch the roundtable discussion, but they don't really get to contribute to the roundtable discussion. And wow, you're going to learn so much, and you're going to have access. This access is so valuable. So a lot of rooms are built like that. And from people that I'd look up their careers and be like, I don't understand why you think you're a big deal, but cool, you've got like 1,000 people in this room talking about TikTok marketing. Awesome. But I did finally stumble into a room with 8 people in it, and it was just named very modestly, your favorite movie, game, and TV show of all time. And I burned almost 2 hours talking about how I grew up with Star Wars and listening to people share their fondest memories about Lord of the Rings. And why, you know, I love Star Trek and I love showing my daughter Star Trek, but the original Star Trek has some problematic themes and sort of entrenched misogyny. And these are teachable moments. And it was really lovely. It really was. If you're not on Clubhouse, you're not missing out. This isn't FOMO. I mean, no, I'm sorry. It is. Let me flip that. It is FOMO. But if you're not on Clubhouse, this exact same experience is easily replicatable in a really good Discord server. Turn on the voice chat. Reach out to some people who are like-minded. Share a link. Join a room. And if you're earnest about joining a conversation, that's already here. You can already have that. It's not unique to the iPhone. It's not unique to this app or service. We're doing it right now. Like literally in this live stream. I know I haven't been kind of digging through as many of the comments because I've just been rambling like crazy because I'm telling you, I'm on fire for this podcast. It's all kinds of snark. But this is exactly what we're doing now. And it's even more interactive here because I can see your comments. There isn't the same kind of chat feature in Clubhouse. You are just a passive consumer of the wisdom of famous people in Clubhouse. So what I really hope is that Clubhouse will be built to be a solid competitor to Discord. I feel like there's something so valuable about the community conversation and making a room and having these sort of roundtable discussions and people can join and jump in and jump out. There is something really valuable there. The human voice in its utter simplicity is so beautiful. And communicating these experiences and sharing these experiences is so valuable. But don't pretend for a second that you're somehow completely left out in the cold if you can't get into that one Clubhouse with like a really famous film producer. What are you going to learn from them? That they had a huge budget from a mega studio and that's how they made this movie? You can already get that in the director's commentary on like a Blu-ray. And who buys Blu-rays anymore? I mean, I do, but like seriously. This is another example. Like the hype is getting away from us. People are really trying to make this sound like it's more than it really is. And what I'm excited to try is to see what other like little rooms we can populate, what other like small, organic, true, real conversations I can join. For that, the app will be interesting. And for that, the app will be valuable. But for those of you who maybe had a passing curiosity about it, maybe you own an Android phone and you're just purposely being excluded for that really obnoxious tech elitism that seems to circle iPhone app development, don't worry. You're fine. You're good. All right, folks, I got to wrap it up. Let's go ahead and put a pin in it. I really want to thank everybody for joining on this podcast, especially those of you that shared and seeing that the numbers on this, like, you know, this was a really good stream for Twitch, for the Twitch side. I knew that I was going to be kind of a little lit up, but then also kind of rambly and a little off my focus for individual stories, especially with a 30-minute housekeeping. But, you know, again, we can make the conversations. We can make the experiences that we want to. We already have the tools today. And what we were going through, you know, looking at those comments, those of you who are reaching out to family and friends and saying like, hey, maybe it's not WhatsApp. Maybe it's something else. You know, maybe it's Discord. How much fun would a family Discord be? And you could fire up like a board game simulator, tabletop simulator, or some card games online, and jump into voice chat while everyone's, you know, sharing their screen and the same thing. And you can all play a game together. Make that. You don't need to wait for someone to exclude a majority of smartphone owners out there to create an experience that you desperately need to have. We can be the change we want to see in the world. So I genuinely do. And wow, Paul Puri just dropped a whole bunch of subs. Paul Puri dropped Tatomic, to Mr. BBI, My Tech Review, Asako, Scrappy Coco. Thank you so much, Paul. And again, thank you so much for those of you who, first of all, who support the production on my various channels. Maybe you're a member of some of these communities. You're on my Discord or on the Patreon. Thank you so much. But then beyond that, everyone else who is genuinely joining this conversation, this stuff is valuable and this stuff matters. And we're so close to like finally getting to see each other in person again. And I want to take this show out on the road. I want to catch up over 2020 and go grab ramen with TK and go get tea with Josh and maybe hop a plane and see if I can't do an in-person stream with Sam and Matt. You know, there's so much that we need to catch up on and there's so much that we need to accomplish. So joining these conversations, sharing these types of conversations, supporting on podcast services, rating and reviewing, but more than anything else, just being present means so much to me. So folks, I hope you have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your tech. I want you to be awesome with your tech. And I'll catch you back here for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Stay safe, be well, be healthy, both of mind and of body. And I'll catch you back. I love you all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.